Once upon a time, there was a woman who wanted peace in the world and peace in her heart and all sorts of good things, but she was frustrated. The world seemed to be falling apart. Just reading the newspapers got her down every day. Maybe some of you feel like this. So one day she decided to go shopping, and she went into the mall and picked a store at random. She walked in and was surprised to see Jesus behind the counter. She finally got up the nerve and said, "Excuse me, but are you Jesus?" "I am. Do you work here?" "No," Jesus said, "I own this store." "Well, what do you sell?" "Just about anything." "Anything?" "Yes, anything. What do you want?" "I don't know," she replied. "Well," Jesus said, "feel free to walk up and down the aisles, make a list of the things you want, then come back to me and bring me your list." So she walked up and down the aisles. She saw displayed peace on earth, no more war, no hunger or poverty, peace in families, harmony, clean air, careful use of resources, and many other wonderful things. She wrote quite a long list. So she goes back up to the counter with her long list. Jesus takes it, skims through it, looks up at her and smiles and says, "No problem." He then bends down beneath the counter and lays out a bunch of packets. She's like, "What is this?" And he says, "Seed packets. This is a catalog store." "You mean I don't get the finished product?" "No, this is a place of dreams. You come here to see what you need looks like. I give you the seeds so you can plant them. Then you go home, you plant these seeds, and you nurture them. You help them to grow, and later, somebody else reaps the harvest of what you've grown." "Oh," she said, disappointed. And then she left the store without buying anything. This story comes from Megan McKenna's book, Parables. Some of you might be thinking, "I would have bought all those seeds." Others of you might be focused on Jesus owning a store at the mall. Others of you might be wondering if this story is true. But let's come back to the seeds. We come to our churches because we are looking to nurture the seeds we already possess. We don't need to buy them from Jesus in the mall. With each way that our hearts and our minds are stretched on a Sunday morning, in an adult education class, in coffee hour with a conversation with someone, we are given the seeds from which our task is to take them and nurture them. Yet often, when we are asked to support social justice, to personally work to dismantle our own internalized racism, it can feel overwhelming and hopeless. Sure, I can work on how I see the world, but is this going to make a difference in the big picture? We are then like the person in the store, walking away from it all because it feels like too much. This is a privileged position to be able to say what you will and won't work for. A choose your own adventure social justice book for people who are able to live their lives without facing daily oppressions. And when we are operating from this model, we use our knowledge and our ways we have been acculturated towards results to guide our actions. According to a Pew study, which many of you may have heard of, Unitarian Universalists have one of the highest percentage of members with a college degree. So with 67% of people in our pews with a higher education, we can think and act like we know all the answers. And if we don't, we're going to do the research to figure it out. This level of education, while very useful at times, isn't doing us any favors when it comes to social justice work. With a high level of education, many people are used to leading, to coming in and deciding how things are done. In her book, A Feminist Ethic of Risk, Sharon Welch speaks to the pervading culture in the United States. This culture is one of control, of figuring things out, clearly seeing an end result, and using that to guide action. What this ethic control leads us to, though, is apathy and despair when the end is not in sight, or the future seems murky at best. I know I have felt it when I see pictures of Syrian refugees and I think, I can't look at one more. And really, what am I going to do that's going to make a difference? Which is the apathy and despair that an ethic of control leads to. Sharon Welch proposes that by leading from an ethic of risk, one becomes more open to possibilities, to embracing the unknown, and thereby remaining open to joy. An ethic of risk is what has me show up at immigration rallies and at companies that are supporting anti-immigration legislation. Showing up and letting go of that internal dialogue that says, is this really going to do anything? And there are a ton of things that I could be doing other than this. Wondering about whether my work is effective. With an ethic of risk, good intentions are beside the point. We are encouraged towards community, towards solidarity, accountability, and respect. It is working alongside others, not for them. By leading from an ethic of risk, it is being open to not knowing all the answers and seeking those answers from those who are directly oppressed and marginalized, taking cues from their leadership, and being aware how quickly we can tokenize them and actively working against that. I'm sure many of us have stories in here of well-meaning Unitarian Universalists who enter a committee meeting and have a plan in mind without finding out what the needs and suggestions are of those that this committee is seeking to support. Anyone have this happen before? When we choose an ethic of risk, we are committed to nurturing those seeds that Jesus spoke of, and we're committed to doing it whether or not we see the fruit of those seeds. We're doing the work because it matters, and because it's a commitment to openness and vulnerability. Through these, joy comes in unexpected ways. Audre Lorde, quoted in A Feminist Ethic of Risk, says, once we begin to feel deeply all the aspects of our lives, we begin to demand from ourselves and from our life pursuits that they feel in accordance with that joy, which we know ourselves to be capable of. She is saying that joy is possible when we embrace an ethic of risk. Some of you might be taking the role of the skeptic in your mind right now. Speaking to this, Sharon Welch says, it's possible to combine skepticism about the likelihood of certain total victory over injustice and persistent energetic work for justice. The key is a complex, fluid, concrete love. Love for the earth, love for oneself, for those who are oppressed, and for those who work against oppression. End quote. To be clear, I'm not speaking of a Pollyanna-type ethic here. This ethic of risk is formed through accountability to others, to remaining open to feedback and stories and insights of those who are different from ourselves. This love is formed from remaining open to injustice, open to the evils and sins of the world, and choosing not to take the privileged position of despair, choosing instead grace and resilience. On resilience, Sharon Welch says, resilient connections with other people and the earth bring joy, pain, and wisdom. These resilient connections are the presence of grace. Grace can move us from resignation, bitterness, and despair to passionate love and determined action. We are moved to moral action by love and hope, not by guilt or duty. I'm going to say that one again because it's so good. We are moved to moral action by love and hope, not by guilt or duty. But for many white people, the response when first learning about white privilege is one of guilt. How do I have this thing that I didn't ask for? All this guilt leads to is avoidance of recognizing the ways that privilege allows me to move in the world and prohibits me from seeing how others who do not have the same privilege are treated right in front of me. Yet when I embrace an ethic of risk, it's using the knowledge that I have gained of my white privilege and actively seeking to dismantle white supremacy. Now, do I think that this dismantling is going to happen in my lifetime? Probably not. But grace, my faith as a Unitarian Universalist, and my love of the people of this world demand that I continue to work towards it. There was a video going around social media the last couple of years titled something like, "Be a Bummer at a Party." Is this resonating with anyone? Do you remember this video? The premise was that when someone says something racist, sexist, or any of the other is, that you need to speak up. You need to be that bummer. Often, especially in middle-class white culture, conflict avoidance overrides taking that risk of speaking up. Yet our faith says we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of everyone. Our faith says that we are interconnected and we cannot afford to be comfortable and conflict avoidant any longer. Of course, some of you might be thinking of an extreme version of this, the person who decides that they are everyone's white savior. This is not what I'm speaking of. An ethic of risk calls us to accountability with others. If all of our friends and circles look and act just like us, this accountability and insight from those we seek justice for cannot be found. This ethic of risk calls us to a deep and abiding joy in the wonder of life, according to Sharon Welch. This deep and abiding joy has no room for cynicism, no room for labeling people, no room for apathy. When we move from a deep and abiding joy in the wonder of life, we remain engaged in the social justice work because of a love for each other, a love of the ways that we are interconnected and interdependent. I led a bus of people to the Women's March in D.C. this past January. What a trip it was. How many people here marched either from home or on the streets? Lots of people. Our hearts were filled to the point of almost overflowing, just leading up to the march. Every bus stop we stopped at, seeing all of the buses, we knew we were a part of something. It didn't even matter that the lines for the bathrooms in the bus stops took over a half an hour. We knew we were a part of something. To the week after the return, I received an email from a participant that said, "I have been so down since returning. I am filled with despair and shame. I don't want to get arrested, and I feel so privileged for even saying that." She had fallen into apathy and despair, which I have had moments of as well. I received news notifications on my phone, and almost every time I see that little icon pop up, I cringe and think, "What is it now?" Yet an ethic of risk calls me into relationship with people, not to remain isolated, and to trust in grace to show up when I need it most. If I'm focused on trying to control the outcomes or see a path clearly before I proceed, grace and joy are difficult to find in my daily life. This deep and abiding joy in the wonder of life is just beyond my fingertips. Recently, I read the story of Steiner Skipsies, who had a realization while looking around one day. He realized how many people are on their phones all the time, waiting for the elevator, for food in the restaurant, maybe even waiting for the church service to begin. Some of you may have had this realization as well. So he decided he was going to meet one new person a day. He was going to put down his phone and have a conversation with someone. And he was going to do it every single day for a year. When people asked, "Why are you doing this?" he said, "To see what could happen." He was not attached to an outcome other than meeting new people. He was embracing an ethic of risk, and joy was the result 9 times out of 10. When we open ourselves to new situations, to unlimited possibilities, we open ourselves to joy. So take a second and think, what helps you remain open to joy? What are those spiritual practices, those things you do with intention that enable you to remain heart open throughout the day? Have you been wanting to do some of those, but you haven't yet started? Each day, we get the chance to begin again, a chance to nurture, water, and coax those seeds of the future we imagine. We all have a part in it, and we are needed for what is to come. Don't sleep through the revolution. Wake up and realize that you are needed. You don't have to lead it, but you need to be present. Remember that we are moved to moral action by joy and hope, not by guilt and duty. Nurturing that joy and hope gives us a solid foundation, which is vital for this movement. Our faith calls us to this. Our world needs us to show up from a deep and abiding joy in the wonder of life, remaining open to life in all of its manifestations. As Elizabeth Alexander said in our second reading from this morning, what if the mightiest word is love? Love beyond marital, filial, national. Love that casts a widening pool of light. Love with no need to preempt grievance. In today's sharp sparkle, this winter air, anything can be made, any sentence begun, on the brink, on the brim, on the cusp. Praise song for walking forward into light. May you all find that deep love and abiding joy in life, and from there move to the work that our faith calls us to. May you feel the seeds of the future within yourself and those around you, and know that each of you is needed for what is to come. Embrace an ethic of risk and abundant joy. May it be so. Amen.